Hello and welcome back to the BenHeck.com podcast. I'm your host, Ben Heckendorn.
I'm Jones.
And I'm Parker. One of us, you know, needs to not sound depressed when we say our names.
you're young. You just haven't really gotten there yet. Wait till you're 40.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow it's like I gotta go back to work. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wait, I don't. Right.
Yeah. Pretty. Yeah. You bum. Yeah,
yep. So anyway, we thought we'd talk about mostly video game topics, or pretty much all video game topics this week. So about a week ago, I think Parker sent me this link to a Reddit article that I thought was kind of...
I did?
It was either you or Chris.
Yeah, it was me.
Right. And it was, the premise of it was kind of like how a lot of things in gaming has been forgotten. Like, there are forgotten games. Like, games are actually really important, but nowadays nobody cares about them. And what really triggered me was someone in the response to it said that the SNES version of Aladdin was better than the Genesis version. And I'm like, WTF.
No, Ben has been triggered. We found Ben's trigger point.
So
Aladdin on the SNES.
Right. So I was thinking maybe we could talk about it because Jones and I, we were there. We remembered it.
We are that old.
Yes. So I think we could probably talk about it from our perspective, because I think what's happening is that video game history is being Nintendo washed.
I would probably agree. It's just, I don't think Nintendo has anything to do with it, though.
So, Jones, would you agree that the Sega Genesis has been kind of forgotten?
Yes, and it's sad. Probably they don't make hardware anymore, I suppose.
Yeah, probably. Because we were of the age where when the Genesis came out, it was the cool thing to get. Like, teenagers, they were all into the Genesis.
It was freaking awesome.
Then they went to college, and they played NHL 94 and NBA Live and Madden. It was...
You know, that actually could be the thing, is that this could be why people don't remember Sega as much, is because the people who were playing Nintendo are still playing video games nowadays, whereas the people who are playing the Sega consoles are not playing video games
nowadays.
Wait,
you think Jones and I don't play video games?
I mean, not as much as, like, you aren't making, like, YouTube videos and stuff about it.
Well, I think...
That's a good point, yes.
Well, I think it's probably more like what Ben just described there was the sports games. Like, that was how I always broke it up between the systems. To me, like, the Genesis was the sports game console for me, and the Super Nintendo was the one that, just like every Nintendo console, you played, like, Zelda and shit like that on. Like, ActRaiser was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But it's like me and my friends, like when we got together and hung out, the Genesis is what everybody had. And we all played like FIFA soccer, NHL, Madden, NBA Live, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But then eventually when Sega kind of went away on consoles, like PlayStation is what replaced it for being the sports game adapter, I guess.
Oh,
you know?
And PlayStation, so. Its sales just annihilated everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
But going back to what Parker said a little bit ago about the age of people. So, yeah, what I think happened was people our age, Jones, or maybe a little older, they played Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Then they played, well, the earlier generation, the older people that played Atari, I think they kind of stopped gaming after the crash. Mm-hmm. And then slightly younger people like our age, we basically played video games with the Nintendo and then never stopped. But we played Nintendo, then Genesis, and then Sony PlayStation. Like, the consoles that were popular followed an aging demographic, so to speak. Because mm-hmm. I remember when I was working on a Funko Land when PlayStation 1 came out, and everybody that bought it was exactly the same. It was like a 25-year-old guy with a dirty starter jacket. But I'm saying it wasn't 10-year-old kids, right?
Oh, God. I forgot about the starter jackets. Yes, I'd forgotten.
No, it was like clockwork. Like a guy would walk in the door wearing a dirty starter jacket with a dumpy looking girlfriend, and they'd be like, "Oh, he's going to trade in two PlayStation games to get one new game," and that's all. Yeah, but I'm just saying it was always like someone in their 20s, because the Genesis and the PlayStation, you know, attracted older demographics than, mm-hmm. versus Nintendo. That's why I kind of think like the PlayStation Classic is kind of dumb, because those people are now like 45-ish, and they don't really care about that stuff anymore. Unlike the younger people who love Nintendo, as Parker was saying.
Yeah, and you if you look at like who is making like YouTube reviews and gaming channels, they're all in like their upper 20s and lower 30s,
yep.
which is the demographic that played Nintendo. Like they had an N64.
So they're dominating the conversation.
Yeah, they're dominating the conversation.
Well, like if you're talking about the Nintendo 64, the PlayStation 1 obliterated that thing in sales. It was not even close.
Yeah, but we talked about this before.
But nobody cares, about the PlayStation 1 because those 45-year-old guys are worried about their divorce, their mortgage, their kids' dental bills. Jones, you remember when Sonic was cool?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah,
Sonic is cool. Very lame right now.
But at one time, he was cooler than Mario. You just had to be there.
To me, I think the linchpin of it is that it, like it always is with Nintendo, it's their IP. You know, they've got Zelda, they've got Mario. They are still pumping those games out just like they did 30 years ago. And whereas, like, Sega, you know, there's kind of a Sonic game that comes out every now and then. But other than that, like, you know, Sony never had anything like that, like a first-party core character like that. So nobody's sitting there looking back wistfully like, oh, I just played the new Mario game. You know, oh, I can go back and play Super Mario 1, 2, and 3 from, you know, the old Nintendo. And then I can play the Super Nintendo ones because I really enjoy the Mario world or the games, you know. Like, whereas, like, Sega yeah. was mainly sports games were the big draw. Sony was kind of the same way. I mean, they had some other stuff. Like, Gran Turismo was one of the huge things for... Yeah, they did have Metal Gear.
Metal Gear.
But I think that's a big part of it, you know, is...
It has a disc drive?
Like, these kids will be like, oh, I played the new Mario, and my dad played, you know, Mario 1, 2, and 3 when he was growing up or whatever.
Mario is like Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, very much. You know, I think, you know, because it's kind of like nobody would probably give much of a shit about Star Wars if they weren't still making movies and stuff about it. But, you know, it comes back into the consciousness again, and then it makes people want to, like, visit all the old shit again. Where if there were only ever the three movies way back when... I mean, it actually kind of happened with Star Wars, like, before the books came out in the 90s. Like, nobody really gave much of a shit about it, and that kind of revitalized it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of it with this. It's like Mario and Zelda, they're always there.
I could say Sega probably would be remembered better if they didn't have a huge... Like, how they exited was pretty bad with, like, a couple consoles in a row that were big stinkers.
Yeah, pretty much everything they did after the Genesis was dumb.
Yeah, yeah, and the fact that there hasn't been a good Sonic game since what, Sonic 2?
What was the Sonic game that came out on the Switch recently? Like Sonic Chaos or Sonic Spirit?
I don't know.
Sonic not as good as Sonic 2?
No, but basically, okay, so there was this guy, like kind of like a guy making fan games. I don't know, 10 years ago. And then he actually got hired to port Sega a Sonic CD to the iPad. A lot of people say Sonic CD is the best Sonic game. And then...
Mania.
Yes, Sonic Mania. Yeah.
That game's been out for a while, though.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it's supposed to be really good. And it's just old school 2D Sonic. Maybe that was a problem. Sonic never successfully transitioned out of 2D, unlike Mario.
Well, I mean, 2D games are still pretty big nowadays, especially platformers.
They've so kind of come back that way, though.
Yeah, but not like super mainstream. I mean, you're talking like, you know, indie game stuff.
Sure, but like Cuphead was a pretty big success.
Okay, that's true.
I forgot about that. And there's a lot of other side-scrolling, you know, 2D platformers and stuff. But like, you know, I think what happened is it... Basically, Sonic or Sega's Mario, so to speak, basically just died as a, you know, mainstream character.
Yep. Yeah.
And so there's been like one bad Mario game.
So since they didn't keep Sega in the public consciousness, that's why people have forgotten about the Genesis.
Well, probably part of it. Part of it. I'm going to say it's the majority of the people who are making content right now are controlling the narrative in terms of they grew up playing Nintendo. That's probably 90% of it.
And then if you think about it, like people my age or Jones's age were pretty much non-existent on YouTube. And nobody pretty cares. Much. Like they had that classic game room guy and all he talked about was Genesis games and his channel died. Because you're right. Like, well, if the content creators are like your age, Parker, like 30, most of the people who watch YouTube are like way younger than that even.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You're probably talking like, you know, early 20s.
Well, something else that was really important about the Sega Genesis is it also was the console that brought game development back to the West. Like everything had gone to Japan over the course of the 80s. But then the Genesis, like that's when EA really started becoming super big was with the Genesis because they were one of the first third-party mm-hmm. developers for it. So, I mean, that's when you started seeing, you know, basically Western studios get back into gaming. And that has completely flip-flopped to the point where, like, Japanese development is, like, I don't want to say dead, but it's like just a mere shadow of what it once was.
I mean, you still got, you know, Nintendo building their games and stuff. But, yeah, most AAA games are made in the States or by a U.S.-based company.
Square Enix is still Japan, right?
I don't know.
Probably correct.
But don't they also publish like Tomb Raider? That's Eidos, right?
Yeah, I think they're all part of the same company. So yeah, there's probably parts of it that are in the U.S. and Canada or whatever, maybe. But I think like Final Fantasy and stuff is still done in Japan. I could be wrong, but
there's a certain quality to Japanese games that I don't know how to explain it, but it's kind of lost now. Like God, what was the last one I probably played? It was Metal Gear Solid 5, I would say. And there's definitely a feel to it.
It's a storytelling, I think, is they like the details in the stories and seeding out that detail and referencing, you know, coming back to it later in the story.
Yeah, there's just also something really clean about the way the games are executed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, what was it? Like, I think, remember, Jones, when you used to play Lost Planet? The game yes. where I taught you how to teabag?
Yep.
But I remember when I played that, even then, which was, 2007? I was like, wow, this game is so Japanese. It was, like, refreshing.
Yeah, and it was great.
Yeah, that. Did y'all ever play the ones that came after 2 and 3?
I did not. I probably should have, but I didn't.
So 2 is a freaking hot mess because they like made it like co-op, but it's like set up to be like co-op only. You can play it by yourself, but it's really weird.
Oh, so it's like
3 is really good. 6. Yeah, not really, but
I'm just being snarky.
It's designed to be a co-op game, and so it's kind of weird because like your character. Like this story happening and like your character's just like on the sidelines because it's designed for a co-op game. But 3 is really good. 3 is really like they kind of like redid like the entire formula and it's kind of like a Western game, but like if a Japanese company did a Western style game.
Didn't that happen with the Dead Rising where the first one was Capcom in Japan and the sequels were like Western and it kind of felt
I would say though 3 is definitely the best one though.
Oh, something else that bugs me about the Sega Genesis is people make fun of blast processing. Remember
blast processing?
But you have one system. Okay, all right.
Well, I'll put it this way. I make fun of all those kind of things. So
right, but I'm gonna get technical for a minute. So you've got Super Nintendo, which runs at maximum 3.58 megahertz. And then if it's accessing RAM, it's actually like half that versus the 7.5 megahertz Sega Genesis. Also, the Super Nintendo was a 16-bit system that had an 8-bit data bus. So you'd have to run twice the transfers to, you know, send a 16-bit word. Versus the Genesis, which was all 16-bit, and actually it was 32-bit internally on the processor. So the fact that people make fun of blast processing, if you think about it, the Sega Genesis cleaned the SNES's clock, which is why it had the best sports games.
Yep. Because, I tried playing like Madden and stuff a couple of times on Super Nintendo, and it was just freaking garbage by comparison.
The reviews for like Gradius 3, which is a launch title, like pros was free slow motion feature.
All the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were definitely a lot of bottlenecks with the SNES that the Sega Genesis just did better. I mean, basically, it had a much better CPU. That was the main thing.
Well, yeah, it's pretty funny how it's like the SNES is the Super Nintendo, and it's because it's pretty much just an extended version of the original Nintendo.
I still kind of wonder if they intended to have backwards compatibility for that.
Oh, I totally think they were, because, and then for some reason they dropped it.
It has the same CPU as the Apple IIgs, which has a 16-bit mode and an 8-bit mode for backwards compatibility with Apple II.
Mm-hmm.
Something else I wanted to say, which I think was probably very attractive for publishers, was since the SNES was a dog, you had to put chips into the cartridge to make it do anything. Like, even very early games already had support chips in it. Whereas the Genesis, basically you just had a cartridge and one mask ROM on it. That was it.
So spent 25% of that on the Sega intro.
I'm just saying that made it cheaper for developers to make the cartridge because it required less hardware inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there were, something else. I was actually talking to this guy, who's a developer, and I hadn't even thought about this, but he said that one big advantage of the Genesis was, since it was so much faster than the Super Nintendo, the games could actually be developed in C and then compiled to machine language. Whereas Super Nintendo was so slow, you had to write in machine language or assembly. So being able to program in C also made the Genesis more attractive to developers.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, Jones, what do you think are some forgotten important games of that era?
Like for any system?
Yeah, for any system.
One I mentioned already was ActRaiser. Like, that was like one of my favorite games on the Super Nintendo.
Is that one forgotten, though?
I guess I don't really go on video game sites these days, so I guess I don't know if they are forgotten. See,
I've actually never heard of that game, so.
Oh, really? Yes.
It's really cool. It's like kind of a mix of like a side scrolling game and kind of like a resource management city building game, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty wild.
That was a launch title as well, wasn't it?
I think so. It was pretty early on. Yeah, ActRaiser.
By Enix.
Yeah, it was a great game. Trying to think other stuff that would have been forgotten. Like, that's the one that just comes to mind initially.
PGA Golf?
PGA Golf.
Maybe not.
Yeah,
so
that
much.
Was a thing. But...
Oh, what was that? F-17? Oh. Remember those, like, jet fighter games for the Genesis by EA?
Yep.
Those were really cool.
F-16 Tomcat or whatever the hell it was.
And then, like, the other one was, like, F-21 Intercept Simulator or something.
Oh, what was the other one I just thought of I just thought of one and then I lost it.
While you're thinking about that, there's this new arcade in town called I.O. And they actually have my old Theater of Magic, Jones.
Really?
Yeah, nice. But they also had the Turtles in Time arcade machine.
Yes!
I was thinking about it because like, that's a really popular SNES game, but the arcade machine is actually not very common.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
I played the hell out of the arcade game.
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was a pretty popular arcade game. I don't know if it's forgotten, but oh my god,
it was.
I wouldn't say it's forgotten.
No, I don't think so. I mean,
yeah. But Final Fight kind of is forgotten, and that one was so popular because it was kind of like a gritty, dirty version of Ninja Turtles.
Well, that was a big deal when they brought that to Super Nintendo also. Like, wasn't it like, though, they only had two of the three characters
and
on the cartridge?
And it had no two-player simultaneous, but the Genesis version did.
But it looked freaking, like, really good.
Well,
like,
Super Nintendo's get great graphics.
Yeah.
They got that Mode 7.
There you go.
That's their blast processing.
Yeah. okay.
What was the PC Engine what was their big stick? They had a turn.
The TurboGrafx, but yeah, I don't know what the hell they.
I don't know.
They're probably coolest thing they ever did is when they brought out the Turbo Express and you could play the full blown TurboGrafx 16 games on the portable system. That was probably like the coolest thing they ever accomplished.
That system's kind of forgotten. That actually, like in Japan, nobody cared about the Genesis, but the PC Engine like just trumped the Nintendo in Japan. But it's kind of forgotten now. Or another thing is like Nintendo never really did that great in Europe, but Sega like owned Europe.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to think of other. It's like I had both systems, I had both the Super Nintendo and the Genesis, but it was like pretty much the Genesis. Yeah, I almost exclusively played like the EA sports games on that. And then Super Nintendo was, like Link to the Past and ActRaiser, stuff like that. Oh, one game I did think of that. It's probably fine that it's been forgotten, but it was like when it first came out, it was like, holy shit, like big deal was Joe Montana Sports Talk Football.
On the Genesis.
Yep. Yeah. Cause that was the first one that had like commentary in it, like by like broadcasters and stuff, you know, where now like that stuff is just, you know,
that's a, yeah,
normal. Just always there. And they have, it's pretty impressive, like how sophisticated it is nowadays. You know, you'd swear you're almost watching like an NBA broadcast when you're playing a game of NBA 2K.
Well, and also John Madden, the first console version was on the Sega Genesis. Madden 91, although it was just called John Madden at the time.
Yeah.
That was pretty important. There were some, like, do you remember Lakers versus Celtics on Genesis? That thing was dog-ass slow.
Oh, God, that thing. It was terrible. But the thing was, I remember I read about that game and I was like, my God, I have to have this game. And I bought it before I had a Genesis. Like we had come down to Madison on a weekend for some reason. And I'm like, I have to have that game. And so I bought it. And then I didn't get a Genesis until like probably 2 months later. But I wanted that game so bad because I'm like, holy crap, it's got real players. And, you know, like at the time, it's like, oh, the graphics are like freaking awesome compared to, you know, like Double Dribble and stuff like that from the Nintendo. And
I remember that game running like it was in molasses in January.
Yeah, it was not fast, but.
something else. The Sega Genesis had a lot of pretty good arcade ports, whereas. I mean, there are arcade ports on the Super Nintendo, but
it's probably because you had more hardware speed, and so you can get away with a little bit sloppier code.
Well, then most of those arcade machines were 68,000 based, and the Sega Genesis had a 68,000 in it. So, yeah, I remember Ghouls and Ghosts was like almost perfect, not quite.
And it came with Altered Beast, which was pretty decent.
Like Golden Axe is pretty close.
Strider, oh, God, Golden Axe. Yes. Yeah. Golden Axe was amazing.
Although I was actually playing Strider a couple months ago, and it does have a lot of slowdown. That's something I forgot from my youth. But
I still have the box from my Genesis. It's in my closet. It's like almost a 30-year-old box.
Still your original Genesis that you have?
Yes, and my original Sega CD and the 32X.
Oh my gosh. I think my Genesis is the original as well.
Yeah, it's and this is something people today, you know, kids today will have no frame of reference for, but it was the Genesis, like, you know, we lived in little old Richland Center or whatever, and we had the JCPenney store, and so went in the catalog and ordered it through the freaking like physical catalog.
Yep.
And then it got delivered to the JCPenney store and then went and picked it up. And it was awesome.
Yeah.
So
PC Engine didn't have a sane like blast processing order, but they had Johnny Turbo. That's what it was.
Oh, I met that guy in Portland last month. That's an actual person.
You met Johnny, that's an actual person?
Yeah. He's an actual person.
Huh.
He was quite the character. Yeah, he had a lot of stories. But he was basically a programmer and developer for the American TurboGrafx-16.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but remember those ads were like, those mini comics were like really dumb, and they had like evil Fekka agents, I think, which was supposed to be Sega. And
Yep.
like the power of the TurboGrafx-16 melted their faces or something. And yes. Yeah, you just don't have crap like that anymore.
Well, that was, yeah, where you had the, you know,
you still
Sega does
do.
What Nintendo don't.
No, Genesis and, you know, like, does what Nintendo
or Genesis,
don't.
Yeah, whatever.
Do you remember
but,
the
yeah,
song?
I mean,
Genesis does what Nintendo don't.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like you actually had it where the companies would trash talk each other, and I mean, that happens a little here and there,
oh, yeah,
but
not
nothing like
then
that.
They had the ad for Star Fox, which said, "Why go to the next level when you can go light years beyond?" Yeah, I miss companies trash talking each other.
I think the last time I can recall when a company like straight up trash talked someone was what, E3? Was it 3 years ago when like Xbox said or Microsoft said you wouldn't be able to borrow games from your friends?
Or Sony's like, how you borrow a game on PlayStation 4.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know the ironic
I think
thing
that's
is,
like the last time
those discs are going to be so gone in the next generation of consoles.
Oh yeah.
If you own any GameStop stock, get rid of it now.
Yeah.
Well, like a disc drive is like 10, 15 bucks on your bill of materials. You get rid of that thing and
well, you've got
you know,
games
you save
like
$30 on MSRP.
Like these games now, it's like a 50 gig game, and the day one patch is 50 gigs. So there's, yeah. There's no point.
The disc is your CD key.
And another thing is it used to be the discs made retailers happy, but now who cares about retailers? Everything's online, so screw them. Why keep them happy?
Yep.
Any other closing thoughts about the 16-bit era, Jones, and things that may have been forgotten, but some things that were once lost were now forgotten? That's my Lord of the Rings impression.
Yes. I don't know, because it's like, yeah, I don't really get terribly nostalgic about games. Like, I don't know, I'm always very much like a current generation game player. I mean, I'll look back and be like, Link to the Past was an awesome game. I'd probably still put it in my top 10 all time. I will probably never play that game again, though. Snatcher was amazing on the Sega CD. But yeah, it's just like, I don't want to break out the old hardware and do all this crap. And I don't want to play something with like the old graphics. Like, I just want to play like modern shit if I'm playing a game. I say this as someone who plays World of Warcraft all the time still, but
yeah,
but they do.
Yeah, that game's 12 years old now.
But they have update, like the new content that comes out is, you know, pretty well done, like graphically and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. So people can, I guess, think what they want, but yeah, they should not forget about Sega and their contributions, you know, to gaming still resonate today, obviously, even if people want to pretend Nintendo is the alpha and omega of gaming.
Oh, just like how Apple invented home computing.
And tablets.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, come on.
Same thing. Same thing.
Yeah.
I think Commodore's not around to defend themselves.
Yeah.
I would say that's more though Apple puts that myth out themselves where Nintendo doesn't say we invented gaming.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So
it's more their fans.
More like where Apple claims to invent things on their iPhone that Android had 3 years ago.
And actually it's interesting is we were talking about the 16-bit era is like I wasn't even gaming then. I didn't start gaming until I had an N64.
That's because you were pocket babies, we'll make your dreams come true.
No, it's just my parents didn't allow video games until I was like, you know, 12, 13. So
wow. I played Atari 2600. That was the first system I ever played heavily.
So I have a 2600 and I have all of them. That thing is like the games I play from the N64 and earlier are highly selected because like I want to play like Link to the Past and that's actually a really good game. But like I'm not going to play like NHL 94.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like, why do I give a shit about this like old you know, but I will say there is a sport game that I do play still. I do play Tecmo Super Bowl still.
Well, and you know what was awesome too about the Genesis?
What?
They weren't a bunch of pussies with like blood and violence and stuff.
Oh yeah.
So it's like Mortal Kombat had the damn blood in it. Freaking NHL, you'd like smack somebody and knock them out of the game and they'd like bleed out on the ice and stuff.
Well, again,
Super Nintendo didn't have any of that shit.
Well, again, and that's why Genesis appealed to teenagers. You know, it was like, ooh, mm-hmm. It's edgy. There's blood. And then if you remember, there was a lot of like really sadistic games on the PlayStation 1, like Twisted Metal and Unloaded, and that were even more violent. Oh, we didn't even talk about Streets of Rage.
Oh, yeah, that was another popular one. I don't think I ever actually had that, though. Or wait, I think it was on the disc that came with the Sega CD. That had a few games on it. I believe there was a Streets of Rage mixed in, along with Columns, which was a freaking awesome Tetris-like game that I played the shit out of.
Oh, yes, I remember it.
Actually, Columns deserves love. I actually liked that game better than Tetris. Yeah. That was probably the game, along with Snatcher, that I played the most on Sega CD. Oh, and FIFA 94.
And they're still
those were the big three.
FIFA all these years later.
FIFA's like a massive cash cow.
Isn't that like
EA.
EA's biggest game?
I think it is.
And then all the people in other countries, they buy all those back kits and they don't care. They just keep doing
it. Yep.
Oh, do you know why? Everybody loves gambling.
Fun fact.
All right, so Fallout 76?
More like Fallout 70 lame.
Fallout 2018, apparently, with the backlash that it's getting.
Parker, you tried the demo, right? You just didn't get much time with it?
Yeah, I spent about an hour on the demo.
Notice how I called it a demo, not a beta?
Yeah. Yeah, because it was a beta.
Yeah, right.
It was classified as a beta, but it like the game came out 2 weeks later. It's like, you don't have that much time to implement any fixes.
It's not a beta.
No, it was a demo for some reason, and they called it a beta. Anyways, so I played it. I'm like, okay, it looks like Fallout 4, which I didn't like. And I didn't get to do any of the base building. I kind of just like wandered around. But it felt the world felt really empty because there's no like NPCs or anything walking around.
It didn't run very well on my computer. Well, sometimes it did, but then other times it was like chunky as fuck.
Yeah, it didn't run. The other thing is Fallout 4 ran okay on my machine, but this game did not.
Parker said something before we started recording. He said they kind of took everything good about Fallout 4 and threw it away, and then just kept the bad stuff from Fallout 4,
which was like base building and then generic radiant quest to clear out enemies.
Yeah, this game has a lot of like daily. So this is like in World of Warcraft, you have like daily missions or daily quests. It has those now, so it keeps people coming back. And but it's like it's always the same thing over and over. Like get. You know, kill 20 of these things to collect their toenails and then turn them in.
And sometimes it's not even that. Like one of the quests we saw was like, pick up 3 barrels out of the lake because it's waste or something. Like
it's littering.
Yeah, so basically you're picking up litter. You're literally picking up litter. That's not.
Yes. In the wasteland.
You're an eco warrior in the wasteland.
It's like, oh my gosh, it's such a mess. It's gonna take ages to clean this up.
Yeah, but the thing is, you pick up the barrels and they just respawn. So it's like you're not even making a difference.
It's very defeating when you play it.
I wonder if a lot of people bought it thinking it was just going to be like Fallout 5. And then they're like, oh, wait, it's not.
But the thing is, though, to Bethesda's credit, they were saying, this is not Fallout 5. This is not Fallout 5. It is not like a normal Fallout game.
Also, to their credit, everyone who sits around bitching about Fallout 76 is going to be camped out inside the store in order to get Elder Scrolls 6.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't care about the Elder Scrolls series. So.
Oh, you'll buy it.
I'll wait till the reviews come out, because I bought Skyrim like a whole year after it came out. So,
I never got into Skyrim. Oblivion was awesome, though.
Skyrim's okay.
Skyrim's
it was
good.
Okay game. I never actually finished Skyrim. I never finished the main quest. So
I would say
the thing with Elder Scrolls is they are.
It's definitely better than Fallout 4.
The thing with Elder Scrolls is they did the smart thing there, and they just said, you know what? We'll make our multiplayer version an actual MMO, and they have that. And then they're also going to develop single-player games in addition. But
so, Jones, what makes Elder Scrolls Online a real MMO versus whatever Fallout 76 is?
Well, I don't know much about Fallout 76, but it doesn't sound like it has... Does it have, like, crafting and, like, dungeons and raids and, like, PvP and things like that, or...
Yes.
It does? Okay.
76, yeah. Well, it has, like, world bosses, I guess is a good way to put it, like, giant creatures that you can take down. But there's no, like, instances in it.
Well, the thing, too, is, like, with an MMO, like, whether
it's... I could be wrong about that, though, but I'm pretty sure there is not.
Whether it's ESO or WoW or whatever, you know, it's like you do have NPCs in the game, and they add to the flavor and the life of the world. Like, there's actually, like, a story there being told as well. Where, I don't know, Fallout 76, from what I've read, there's no NPCs, so there's not really a story element to it so much.
So there is a story of your overseer from the vault that you just get like a radio signal and stuff, and you just follow what the quest line does.
Oh yeah, but you go around picking up her logs, like, oh, I was here, now I'm going here. Yeah. Then you go there, then you find another log. I was here, now I'm going there. So
yeah, you never Lori was here, right?
Yeah, you never meet her.
Yeah, I didn't get that far to it. Basically, what I wanted to do when I was playing the beta was, like, because I knew there wasn't going to be a story or anything, so I'm like, okay, how's the actual game? And so the good thing about Fallout 4, one of the best things they did in Fallout 4 is they made the gunplay better. It's not like an FPS still, but it, like, you can actually aim and shoot a gun now. Whereas in Fallout 3, it was like you had to use VATS to actually, like, hit something.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say it's better than Fallout 4. It's on par with Fallout 4, which...
Oh, no. So in this game, I was comparing it to, you know, it's just as good as Fallout 4 in terms of its gunplay. Except that the VATS now is...
It's basically an aimbot.
Yeah, it's basically an aimbot because it doesn't slow down time.
I thought VATS was stupid. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh,
see, I love.
No, that. I mean, in Fallout 76, it was stupid.
Yes, in Fallout 76, it's stupid. But basically, what they're doing is masking the fact that their engine can't support a precise input with the mouse or a controller
or
whatever.
That's what VATS did in Fallout 3. But now in this game, it's like, oh, we still want to have VATS, but we have to account for the fact that the game is in real time and you can't pause. So the only way to do it was to basically make it an auto aim. So yeah, when you go into VATS in this game, Jones, basically the entire enemy lights up with a percentage to hit, and then you pull the trigger. That's it.
Yep.
Wow.
Oh, and it's in real time. It's in real time.
Yeah, it's in real time. And you don't get to select like
parts of the body or anything.
Oh, and the user interface was atrocious.
It's still bad, too. They never fixed
it. It's like the laziest port to PC ever, especially like the base building, which you didn't do, Barker. It's like you scroll through the top-level items with like Q and E, and then you scroll up and down with two other keys. It's like they basically just mapped controller inputs to random keys in the keyboard, and that's it. Like,
it does feel like completely random keys.
Yeah.
Because when you're in menus, Jones, when you're in a menu, how should you exit the menu?
Escape key?
No.
Tab?
Tab?
But it changes, too.
Oh, yeah, because sometimes tab makes you go forward, sometimes it makes you go back.
Yes, and there is one menu, I can't remember what it was, that does use escape. So it's like, whoever designed that one menu, props. So, but everyone else, go pound
sand. If you go into the crafting, if you go into the crafting menus, Parker, it's like you go into the menu and you like dive down. So it's like one button to dive down and then tab to back up. But there's a certain point where to back up, you can't hit tab. Then you have to hit escape. So it's not consistent either. But yeah, so do you, the Pip-Boy, it's like, so the game doesn't pause. So it's in real time. And then you have to go into the Pip-Boy and there's actually more tabs than before. So you can't even see all the available tabs. You have to scroll left or right until the tabs come up. It's atrocious. It's like, they should have just, I mean, it's not like it's like Red Dead Redemption where everything in the game was just like super literal. There should have been like, oh wait, the Pip-Boy interface is completely inappropriate. I mean, it was cute in the previous games, but it's completely inappropriate for this. I mean, you think about like, remember the really sleek interface for Skyrim for changing the weapons where it was almost like a Windows menu, how stuff popped up.
Oh, I thought Skyrim's on PC was absolute terrible as well.
Well, it was designed for consoles.
Yeah, but at least you could at least navigate with it. And same thing with Fallout 3 in New Vegas.
It was almost like this Windows start menu in a way.
That's the thing, though. You guys are complaining about the PC aspect of it. So all the stuff about the UI, it makes me wonder, like, maybe this game's like a way better experience on the console? Maybe?
Well, yeah, you probably wouldn't notice those kind of things because... But that's just, that would just make the user interface better on the console. It wouldn't fix the other problem.
Yeah, it wouldn't help the other issues, but
There was some, I think it was in Battlefield 1. It's so dumb. Like if someone sends you a join party request, the icon comes up and it's an arrow pointing left. And so you're
I have no idea what that means.
Right,
still.
Right. But if you look on your keyboard, there's two arrows pointing left. There's backspace and enter, right? Right. And but the enter key, see how there's a little bit of a line going up at the end of the line, whereas backspace is just a straight line? They're technically different. So you see that and you're like, oh, it's the enter key because I'm going to enter the party. I'm going into the party. So I hold enter. Also, you don't tap it. You have to hold it. So it does that stupid like button filling up animation that every goddamn game does now. But no, in Battlefield 1. It's just a straight line with an arrow on the end, which means it's the backspace key. So to enter a party, you're pushing back.
Wait a minute, which game? Battlefield 1?
Battlefield 1. Or... Yep.
So the best thing about this is I put like over 100 hours into Battlefield 1. I could never figure out how to make that thing work. Now we just basically
worked for like the first year.
I basically would just click Ben's name and then just click join that way.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I'm like, I saw that button and I'm like, is that backspace? Is that enter? Is it left arrow? I don't know.
To me, like one of the biggest sins of this Fallout game that it sounds like to me is just that the world feels like empty is one of the complaints that I hear.
That was the biggest thing I found when I was playing it was how empty it felt compared to previous Fallout games. There's something about having an empty world. Like at the beginning of Fallout 3, when you first come out of the vault and the searing light, and you come out and there's just like barren wasteland in front of you until you get to like Megaton.
Yeah.
Which reinforces this like wasteland kind of mentality. But in Fallout 76, it doesn't feel that way at all.
Well, the thing is, you go to Megaton, though, and it's like you encounter people and you start to learn. Yeah, you start to learn something about the world and what's going on, and that kind of drives you to go out into the world more and explore more, and then you encounter more people, and it sounds like that's just an element that does not exist in this game. So
yeah, I would agree there.
That's the thing that's cool, like in an MMO or whatever, you know, like, I mean, I play World of Warcraft all the time, but it's like, you know, you're out questing and you happen upon somebody out in the wilderness and they've got the little exclamation point over their head. And so you talk to them and then you get a little bit of a story about that person and you can help them or whatever it may be. Or you come into some town and there's activity going on. And
I think that was what was so great about older Bethesda games is you would get sidetracked. You wouldn't even do the main missions because there's always something you could see.
I would say Skyrim was like the number one for that, where like you will be like questing and you're following the main mission and then you see a cave and you end up going into like the dwarven city and you're like, where the fuck am I? And you come out on the other side of the map.
And you don't end up like coming back to the main quest line like if you didn't want to. Like in Oblivion, I remember I went off and did like the Thieves Guild and the Dark Brotherhood and shit. I'm like off doing all that stuff that you don't really need to do. And I'm spending like weeks doing that stuff, you know, not even touching the main quest line because it was interesting and fun.
There's like this like gaslighting going on now where people are saying that all Bethesda games are shit just because people don't like Fallout 76 and
oh, Jesus.
No, like with Skyrim, it's like, oh, give me a fucking break. Like, everyone worships Skyrim. That was a huge, massive hit. We all played it for hundreds of hours.
Well, it's on every freaking system imaginable, I think. You know, like, they brought it, they brought like, it out on everything.
I think the Amazon Alexa microwave can even play it.
Probably, because it's like it's on the freaking Switch for Pete's
and this
sake.
Is, and this
I mean,
is the thing, is, with Fallout 4, even though I didn't like it, I still put 65 hours into that game before I decided just to not pick it up again.
Actually, that would be an interesting little side tangent there. Not that there'd be anything probably much that'll come of it, but like that whole thing where like every year there's like a game that comes along, it seems like it gets anointed like the greatest game ever made. Nobody ever says that about movies when they come out. You know, like the old movies are just like entrenched, like nothing can ever touch like Vertigo or Citizen Kane. But it's like gaming apparently is different. It's like they can just come along.
The people that often bring up Vertigo as being one of the greatest films ever made.
Vertigo is actually number one on that Sight and Sound list or whatever, the one that Citizen Kane was number one on for like 50 years.
Really?
Vertigo topped it the last time they did that list. Yeah.
I think that's because people are more invested in video games than movies because they're interactive.
You could also say that video games are still, well, you think about it, like, you know,
it's a media still trying to find
its
place.
It's still a media that's being formed, whereas something like Vertigo didn't come out until Hollywood was 50 years old.
Well, and it's also, I think, you know, like you don't have a list like these lists for movies that come out, and you don't have like ever since I started caring about movies, it was always, oh, Citizen Kane's the greatest movie ever made. I don't agree, but it's like it was just like entrenched. It's like, nope, that is how it is. Like, there's nothing like that for video games. Like, there's no list out there that says A Link to the Past is the greatest game ever made, or, you know, whatever it is.
I think a big reason for that is, you know, movies basically, for, you know, they're at 24 frames a second and they, you know, they have sound, which has been the standard since the 20s, you know, once they got sound.
Yeah.
So they might have better technology with which to put images on screen, but movies have always had the ability to, you know, film people in photorealistic locations and then, you know, have them do things. Whereas video games only, you know, like the last 10 years or so have really gotten, you know, like I don't think many people argue that most of the best video games ever made have come out like in the last 10 years. And I think
it's probably true
because the technology, you know, got it to that point. And you could say,
this goes back to where Jones was saying earlier, where Jones is like a here and now kind of video gamer. I would agree, is like, we have not, in my opinion, we have not hit a golden era of video games because every year is just better than the previous year in terms of video games.
I don't know if I'd necessarily agree with that completely. Like,
well, I mean, not every game can be bad company.
When was the last time we had a BioShock? I think BioShock is a high water.
But no. You're thinking too small in like games that you've only played. Like, I've been playing Octopath Traveler, and right now that is my favorite game I've ever played in my life.
I think the thing with BioShock is that came along and then you had other games try to do what BioShock did. Like, how often does that happen anymore? Where, I mean, other than like loot boxes and shit, which doesn't really count.
The whole battle royale thing.
That's true. That is a good point. That is, a new kind of genre, basically.
When WoW came out, everyone tried to be the WoW killer. For a long time, and then
BioShock really started the whole trend of telling a story through like audio logs and ghosts and stuff.
Yep.
Before that game came out, that wasn't a very common storytelling trope, but after BioShock, every game did it.
Yep. Yeah, like Dead Space and
Borderlands
audio logs a bit too.
Yeah, they had audio logs.
Fallout.
So are we talking about like
Batman Arkham games? basically where the setting is as much a part of the story as the story itself, and how the backstory is revealed in audio logs, because in audio log you can listen to it and still be moving around and stuff, you know, it doesn't like lock you down.
I would say before that, you know, the Half-Life series at least gets the, because they have NPCs telling you the story, but the setting of those games are just as important to the story as you know, the audio that you hear from the NPCs. It's almost there.
I think for me, like personally, like BioShock may still be the most like fully realized, like immersive world I've played in a video game. Like
it would be up there. It would be up there for me. Yeah.
Cause it was just like, just the whole way it introduces you to the world. Like you go down that elevator thing into the cart, whatever, and you're like going through, and then you're hearing the Andrew Ryan speech, and it just like sets everything up so like brilliantly, and you feel like very isolated, and but at the same time you're having like this whole world revealed to you. It's
like a ride at Disneyland.
Phenomenal. Yeah, it was just phenomenal. And
yeah,
I've played anything like that.
I want to say too, the twist to that game, that's the first twist in a video game still for me that really caught me off
guard.
And
games have been way dumbed down since BioShock, including BioShock Infinite. Because remember BioShock, you had like all those different guns, which you always had with you, and you could upgrade the guns, and then you had multiple types of ammo for each gun. Yep. Then you have BioShock Infinite, where it's like rifle, pistol, shotgun.
The thing too with BioShock, I think, was like, yeah, it had that awesome twist. But the thing that was great about the twist is, unlike in movies where the twist generally happens like right at the end, it was like about halfway through the game, so it caught you off guard even more because of that.
Yeah, and the thing about it is like you're like the first half of that game, you basically blindly follow what everyone tells you to do, right?
Yeah.
And then afterwards, you always are like, should I be listening to the people who are telling me what to do now?
And the twist about, you know, following directions is also a meta commentary on video gaming itself.
Yeah.
You don't
free will and all that.
You don't fuck Fontaine. Fontaine fucks
fuck you. See, you still remember that 11 years later.
You're goddamn right.
Am I gonna remember any dialogue from Red Dead Redemption in 11 years?
Probably not.
Well, since there's like 9 trillion lines of dialogue, I probably can't remember any specific line. But yeah.
This reminds me, I do need to go back and replay BioShock, because I think it was last year, Black Friday or somewhere around there, but they had like the BioShock collection that was like remastered for Xbox One, like super cheap. So I bought it. I have not played it yet, but I should.
If you have it in your Steam library, it automatically updates to the remastered version.
Oh, really?
Yep. So that's where mine lives.
That's pretty swank.
So I've got something. Is how about for the next podcast, we all replay BioShock and then have a like decade later like review of it.
That'd be interesting.
Like, how does it hold up to modern games, and you know,
is it still as good as we remember? Yeah.
I think it'll hold up. It still looks amazing. Like, the graphics for that game are so good.
Well, what's the first thing you see in it? Was it no god, no government, only man.
No god or kings, only men.
Yeah, no kings, yeah. That's right.
Is man not entitled to the sweat of his brow?
It had a very strong there was a theme to it, you know. It was basically like Ayn Rand's amusement park. Look at this dumb shit on Steam. So I went to look at BioShock on Steam, and on the page it says, "Is this game relevant to you? This game doesn't look like the other things you've played in the past. As such, we don't have much information on whether or not you might like it."
Ugh.
Wow. I thought these companies knew everything about us. So we're all gonna play BioShock again before the next podcast.
I will.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
It'll give me an excuse to fire up the X-Bone. Wait a minute, I have to find out what the hell are Red Dead Weird Laws, because you have
Well, probably shouldn't take
Because you're the only one playing that game.
Well, I think you guys are the only ones not playing it.
I guess so.
It's weird. Like, I can be going down the road on my horse, and this lady will be like, "Help me, mister. My leg's broke." Right? So I go up to her, and she pulls out a gun. She's like, "Ha ha, you're getting robbed." Then, like, two of her compatriots come out on horses, and they start shooting at me. And so I kill them all to defend myself, right? Then I start looting their corpses. Then if another passerby sees me looting their corpses, then I'm wanted for murder.
Well, you gotta just kill them then.
That's what you can do. You have to like stop the witnesses, but it's really weird. It's like stuff like that doesn't make any sense. Or like the game will put you in situations where
it does make sense though, because if you were driving down the road and came across a guy like looting a dead body, what would you think?
Yeah, you probably wouldn't think that he was defending himself.
Yeah, but in the logic of the game is one unit, so the game should be able to tell that person, oh, they did this in self-defense. Now, yeah, you're right.
I actually like that's actually really cool that the game
you
does
play
that.
The game and have it happen to you, and you see how cool you think it is.
Well, I don't have a PlayStation 4 Pro Elite thing, so no.
Okay. So here's the thing. Can you actually get, like, arrested in that game and put in jail, and then, like, you have to go before a judge and stuff?
So that's another thing. Like, when you start the game early on, like, there'll be missions that basically force you to kill a bunch of lawmen. So you'll have, like, a $70 or $80 bounty, which is, like, a ton of money. And then you basically can't afford to pay for it. So the cheapest thing to do is to let yourself get arrested and then go to jail. And then basically your bounties go away.
I like how you can murder a bunch of people and just pay $80. And then you're like, you're fine.
Yeah.
Like even nowadays, like if you murder a bunch of people, you're not going to
but it's dumb. It's like,
money
you could be in the middle of nowhere and rob someone, and then someone will be like, I'm a witness. So basically someone has to witness the crime, right? So they'll basically run off camera, and then all of a sudden there'll be like four lawmen out of nowhere trying to hunt you down. It's like, come on. I don't know. That part of it's not very fun, but other than that, I'm starting to enjoy it. It's probably overrated, of course. I think it's like Blade Runner 2049. If you make something that's pretty enough, it will be just praised to high heaven.
A Blade Runner 2049 is pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
how you said cool and not good.
Well, I think it's good. I would put it probably in the top five for last year.
That was a movie where people saying it was one of the best movies ever made, but as soon as it was released.
Really? Oh, yeah. That is true. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, that's a reach. But
yeah.
Yeah, see, I think the thing that helped me with Blade Runner is, like, I don't really read movie shit much, so I don't hear the hype for things. And then Ben, I had heard him for months saying, like, oh my god, this movie's overrated, it's long, it's boring, it's not any good. So by the time I saw it, my expectations were pretty much at, like, basement level. So it had nowhere to go but up. And then when I saw it, I'm like, well, shit, this is, like, infinitely better than the original.
Oh, yeah.
Which that
just like
that would probably get me crucified in some circles, but it's true.
There's just scientific stuff. I just don't understand. Like, okay, so they find Sean Young's bones, right? And they have to zoom in a million times before they can see the serial number, right? So replicants must be pretty close to humans then, huh? Then why is it Notebook Man can jump through a brick wall?
Because he's Notebook Man. When does he jump through a brick wall?
And near the end of that movie, remember when they're in the hotel in Las Vegas, and then Harrison Ford's like, oh, I think you were followed, and they're running into the other room to get to the hover car or whatever, and so Harrison Ford goes to the door and locks it behind him to stop Ryan Gosling. Then Ryan Gosling just jumps through the brick wall because he can.
He's a newer generation of replicants. So
he's a replicant that's like filled with like iron ingots.
Adamantium.
Adamantium. Unobtainium.
Well, adamantium wouldn't give you an extra mass. How much does adamantium weigh? Where is it on the periodic table of elements?
I'm just going off of the fact that Wolverine, I mean, I know he's got like self-healing, that's like his mutant power or whatever, but it's like, you know, I bet he could jump through a brick wall.
Because of the adamantium?
Well, it wouldn't hurt. That's why he wouldn't break any bones.
Adamantium. Adamantium and then a periodic table. Of course, this is going to be on, this will exist. Adamantium is a virtually indestructible man-made steel alloy. Oh, wait, okay, so
there you go.
Feeling it.
It's an alloy, so it's not going to be on the periodic table.
Oh, adamantium is not an element, even though it has steel in it. Its properties do not qualify for any known space in the periodic table of elements.
Yeah, because it's not an element. It's an alloy. Yeah,
well, closely rated to iron, and there has to be carbon in there, too.
I feel like this totally justifies the ending of Blade Runner 2049.
But his bones are only covered with adamantium. It's not like he's got bones of adamantium, so it's really going to add that much weight. Wait, why does it matter if Wolverine can jump through a wall? We're not talking about Wolverine. We're talking about Ryan Gosling.
So what if it's a shitty brick wall?
Well, I don't know. Wolverine. Because Wolverine is a specimen that has adamantium that is a known quantity. It's obviously real. So...
Well, replicants are totally real too.
But like,
why can't they replicate go through a wall?
But yeah,
a human could go through a wall, but they would be smashed to bits. Yes. So they might have the mass to go through a wall, but the energy that would take to propel them through that wall would cause them to be smashed to bits.
Well, it depends.
No, it doesn't.
Maybe it wasn't load bearing or something. I don't know.
It's like a cinder block wall in that movie.
Hey, people punch through cinder blocks.
I'm gonna go rewatch that shit tonight.
All right.
Just for this, but like Wolverine. So at the end of Days of Future Past, remember when he like sinks to the bottom of the freaking Potomac
maybe
or whatever?
He doesn't know how to swim, maybe.
But then, well, what about in X2 then, when they like inject like female Wolverine with like adamantium and she like sinks and like clanks against the bottom?
They stuck a bunch of rebar in him, right? He had like a bunch of rebar things stuck through him?
He did. That's what, you know, held him in place so he couldn't move. But like in X2, when they like inject, you know, female Wolverine with a bunch of adamantium, like she clanks against the bottom of the.
Yeah, she sinks freaking, pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, granted, they like overloaded her with adamantium, but still, I would add some mass and make it so the bones wouldn't break. I think Notebook Man could do this.
Probably, I would say so. I mean, we have. We have real life humans can punch through cinder blocks. I think if you were like a genetically engineered.
Well, I was just going to say this could be like one of those things, you know, where like the car like falls off the jack and then the human has like superhuman strength. Maybe this is that moment. Like Gosling's like, this is a moment where I need to enact superhuman mode, and he jumps through a wall.
Oh, adrenaline.
Yeah. You know, he's just like, whatever.
Well, earlier in the movie doesn't.
Mind over matter.
Earlier in the movie, Drax pushes him through a wall at the slug farm. Remember that? But that's just like a drywall wall. It wasn't like a. I'm telling you, it's like a cement cinder block wall that he goes through in that movie, Jones.
All right. I'll go ahead and do some verification on this.
You had to go onto Reddit and post it immediately. And that's why he was able to jump through a brick wall.
It's just like how Jar Jar, people that love the original trilogy should love Jar Jar, because without him, their precious original trilogy doesn't exist, because the Emperor doesn't get all of his frickin' powers handed to him. It's like, they should, like, kiss Jar Jar's frickin' Gungan feet.
Hey, I agree. I don't agree with that, but...
You should, Jar Jar because didn't. It's true.
Jar Jar didn't... Jar Jar is the least of those movies' problems.
Jar Jar is the Alpha and Omega of Star Wars.
I still hope he comes back. That would be amazing. If you think about it, in 1 year, next year, when Episode 9 comes out, Jar Jar will officially be nostalgic. 20 years.
Yep. He should be in that Mandalorian show.
Maybe.
Like he should kick some bounty hunter's ass.
So any final gaming thoughts for this episode?
When's the next Star Wars game coming out?
BioShock is better than anything that has come out this year.
But God of War is the greatest game ever made.
Don't care. God of War isn't even the best God of War game.
BioShock is the... Yeah, exactly. Man, what was the game?
I say this never having played the new one.
There is some gaslighting going on with that as well, Jones, where people are like, well, in this game, he's actually a sensitive father figure. It's like, he was in the other games. He's like, my family has died because of my hatred. It's like, it's not like that wasn't touched upon.
Yeah, he was fucking...
Ugh. Murdering the shit out of gods.
But yeah, he was like, fuck all of you for making me this way.
Exactly. I've actually only played the first God of War, and it is one of my favorite games, because he's just like, fuck everything, I hate everything, just beats the shit out of things.
All three of, like, the original three are really good.
All right, so before the next podcast, we all have to play through BioShock, apparently.
Yes.
Yep, and then I will form an argument on Notebook Man Brick Wall.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess we didn't quite get to all the topics we wanted to, but it was still one hell of an episode.
We don't promise anything.
Yeah,
no return.
Right. Yeah, it's like under promise, over deliver. So that's what we should
all
do
right.
or something.
Well, I guess we'll see you all the next episode, which will be like, what, the Christmas holiday special, I suppose?
Oh, yeah, are we going to do such a
Maybe.
Thing? I suppose we should.
It's been a long time since Mario was like a Mario cop.
That's true.
Maybe Jones should get drunk.
I could do that for the Christmas episode.
Yeah, for the Christmas episode.
I will have like three beers, and that would probably do it.
All right. Well, we'll see you in the next episode.
Adios.
Later, everyone.